LeanCast, Product Innovation and UX Design with Bonanza Design.
Hello everyone, Behrad here from Bonanza Design. This is the 8th episode of LeanCast, a podcast that explores anything that deals with innovation. And for that reason, I'm delighted to have Tomomi Sasaki on the podcast, and I'm excited to have this conversation with her. When I learned about what Tomomi does from a friend of ours, Stefan, from previous podcast, in case you haven't heard of it, please do listen to that podcast. Tomomi's background got my interest, and she has done tons of work in the field of distributed teams, and how we can empower distributed teams, how we can empower group dynamics. So I am ready to jump in to all of this with Tomomi. Tomomi, how are you doing? Welcome on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Brad. I'm very excited to be here and chat about distributed teamwork and how we can design the way we work together.
Appreciate it. Tomomi, I would like to jump into this, but before, I would like to learn a bit about your background and basically understand what happened that you ended up here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. So I'm a designer originally from Tokyo, and I've been based in Paris since 2014. I'm partner at AQ, which is an independent design studio, and our bread and butter is providing product design, prototyping, and user research to our clients, who tend to be product companies or innovation teams at multinational companies with some kind of connection to Japan. And what we're really good at is doing that work while building bridges. And so that might be between the design org and their stakeholders, or the local Japan team with their, you know, US or European headquarters, or a non-Japanese person with the rest of a Japan org. And so it's a big part of our design practice to really focus on the people, the way we interact with each other, because we believe that that's what leads to good work, and like happier and more fulfilled practitioners as well. And so, yeah, I was excited when I learned that your company is also a distributed team, because I think it's the topic to work on. And where I'm coming from is that in our industry, we love to talk about what Google and Apple are doing and what Elon Musk said today and what, you know, Mark Zuckerberg said this morning about how we should work. And this is very interesting. And I also follow this kind of discussion. There's a lot to that we can learn from and exchange. And I think we need a much wider variety of stories, because I don't work at this kind of company. Like, we're 10 people and we decide how we want to work. A lot of my peers are also, you know, they're independent or they have way more agency at the unit of the team, especially. And so I see today as a way to tell at least two more stories, mine, and I hope also yours as well.
Yeah, gladly. I think it's a very touching point that there is a lot of case studies, a lot of focus on big teams, big companies, big corporations, but actually the real work of innovation that happens on the grounds, right? There are a lot of startups trying. There are a lot of new initiatives rising up, and the real knowledge, a good portion of experiences are made on this ground where smaller companies and smaller teams are operating. A bit about us, Tomomi, is that we were distributed teams, remote teams before Corona hit. So when the pandemic hit, For us, everything was the same. But I realized on that day, when I think it was around end of March or beginning of April, that all of my LinkedIn feed was about tips on how to do remote work, tools to use right now to facilitate this and that, podcasting to that, and I was baffled. I really didn't know how to contribute to this dialogue, although we were a remote team. Mm-hmm. I was overwhelmed, to be honest, seeing that. And now I feel like everyone is understood that the remote work is going to stay. However, the remote work, distributed teams, handling those dynamics are not easy. So I would love to really tap into that with you. Referring to your experiences, what are the challenges running distributed teams? Break it down for me. That would be nice.
Yeah, I really relate to your reaction to when the majority of the world was faced with this situation. I also felt like, the conversation was, oh, it's possible, right? Like there's an element of surprise. Oh, we can work remotely. That was the conversation, I think, 2 years ago. And as your company, we've been working in a distributed way for much longer. And actually, I want to share kind of, I don't know, the origin story, I suppose, because our first taste happened on March 12, 2011. And I know this date because March 11th, it was the day of the Tohoku earthquake and tsunami in Japan. And so, yeah, we were not going to the office anymore and were working from home, which was not set up. You know, we all were in tiny apartments, and this was before Slack. We were using Campfire. I don't know if you and the listeners remember this product from Basecamp. And even though we've always had a global clientele and we're used to working across time zones and cultures and using tools like Google Hangouts, like our team was always situated. And so, yeah, it was like a really miserable time. I mean, the impending nuclear disaster situation did not help. But we were not able to cope with working alone. Like, it was a very lonely time. And after a few days, we did call everyone back. Each person had decided to stay in Tokyo rather than moving to a different part of Japan. And that's when, we started to work on more persistent communication habits, documentation, and more clear processes, and kind of have taken it from there. So that was kind of where we started. And then in late 2014, colleague and I relocated to Paris, which was our first office outside of Tokyo. We became a distributed company. And I think we learn a lot from our clients. And by that time, we had really become quite proficient at working remotely. And by that, I mean being able to choose where you work from, how, and even what time. So I like to think through the lens of time and space. And yeah, that's, I think, is actually coming back to your question on the greatest challenge. I think these two lenses are like really useful way to think about it. And to see these as opportunities for how the team wants to work together so that it's fit for purpose, whatever the team is trying to do. So maybe we can talk a little bit about time first.
Sure. Let me ask you one question. How do you have any active hours together that you define per day? How do you make sure that I would assume Well, I mean, sort of what we do are similar. And when it comes to the work of innovation and design, there is a lot of communication needs to happen. I am a designer that appreciate conversation a lot. I ask a lot of questions. I ask a lot of stupid questions to first and foremost, because there is a, I find a lot of value in asking very plain, obvious questions. They are so underrated, first of all. I value all communication a lot, especially when it comes to developing new concept for apps, for services, what have you. How do you manage this?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I also very much value the like the synchronous time that we spend with our colleagues. I think this is always specific to your context. And in my situation, with the Japanese and like French CEST time zones, it works out that my mornings, so usually 9 to around 1, can be from 8 if I have more, if there's a need for more overlap. That overlaps with the afternoon of Japanese working hours. And so this actually gives us a way to zone like my calendar, but also my colleagues. And so there's like a baton moment if it's needed, or if we need to, you know, want to be taking 1 or 2 hours for discussion, that's when that happens. And then we pass it on. And depending where the client is, if they're based in Europe, maybe I take lead more in the communications. If they're more in APAC time zones, someone else on the team takes it. So staying very conscious of where we are in the world, and then having things documented and transparent, and you know where to find the in progress work, all contribute to everybody having their own boundaries, while making sure that we have that brainstorming and that like divergent time that you mentioned.
Let's say you are onboarding a client from a different time zone. Let's say America, North America, Australia. I feel like if given that you have been in the world of remote world for since 2011, you have a lot of experiences. I want to get into the practical nitty-gritty and tips on this. Let's say there is a client from America or or Australia, and you are sitting in Paris, your team sitting in Japan, and they want to initiate the project in Japan. What would be the steps you take, initial steps to onboard them, to set their expectation and start the work?
Yeah, I think it's a collaborative process. We are onboarding them to our process, and we are being onboarded onto their process. And that is at the organizational level, but also at the project team level. And so I think in the beginning, it's really critical to get on the same page about how we want to communicate, what are the touch points that are needed, is there a preference for written versus oral versus whatever, what kind of tools do they like to use. And I always see new clients as an opportunity for us to, like if we have a more mature practice, to onboard them to the way that we work. And then if they have new practices, or if they have constraints on their tools, because some companies are not able to use Mural, for example, it's a chance to be flexible. And so, yeah, that's such an important part of learning to work together at the beginning of any collaboration. And we try to take opportunities to kind of push things in a way that we would be most comfortable. So that might be quite small things, as you say, the nitty-gritty, the executional detail is important, and that might be in the way that we share or take meeting notes, or as we're going into a call or a workshop, you know, we'll set up a canvas on Mural and like, let's use this. And I think you ping pong on that so that the project team is building kind of its own ways of working.
In documentation, I keep hearing about documentation as a way to keep everyone in the loop. How do you, what's your approach to documentation? What are your tips on, especially for like in this scenario, when you have a client based in America and you're sitting in Paris, your team sitting in Japan, what are the best tips to document, especially coming from your own experience, the expensive mistakes that you made or anything as such?
It's funny you mentioned expensive. Our approach is something we call minimum viable documentation.
And okay.
That depends on what we're doing in that moment, right? Who needs to know what and in what format is that best communicated? So it could be meeting notes. It could be a sketch that's shared on Slack. It could be a video recording of a talk. I think the key is to have a variety of tools available and to think about who's consuming it and what you want them to do next with it. And so I've seen a lot in our projects that like project members on the client side will pick up the tools that we like to use for instance. I feel like there's such an interest in kind of upgrading the way that we collaborate, and it's appreciated by our clients when we're able to bring new practices.
I've seen that too in our project as well, especially we used to work with Mural, Figma. Mm-hmm. Now we are basically internalizing everything on Figma. There is now Figma and Figma Jam. Mm-hmm. So we don't feel the need to get out of the environment of Figma. So sort of like chose a path of least resistance, meaning consolidate all the activities in one platform. And then often, used to be a lot more last year than this year, we would introduce them to our setup, and then the founders that we were working with, then they would pick up our habits of doodling on Figma, organizing their PDFs on Figma, because we basically do everything on Figma. It's interesting how this collaboration affect each other, and you sort of like become, get new tools, upgrade your mindset, the way you collaborate after each project with the external partner.
Yes. I think, you know, especially in the context of innovation, really looking at the way that we work, not just on what we're working on, is really critical. And maybe one of the greatest challenges when we are remote or hybrid or distributed is that, like, whose job is it to look after that? Actually, it's everybody's job. And then depending on who's in the team, like, your personal preferences can really take priority so that the team is able to both perform and enjoy working together.
My needs as a person versus the collective needs of a group.
Yes.
How do you balance this?
I mean, it's not always a versus, right? We want as much as possible to have both. So I go back to this idea of time, because one of the projects I wanted to introduce is taking time as material. And so we recently launched a new initiative in partnership with some collaborators. So Andrea Darabosch, who's an agile coach based in London, and Stefan Morales, who's an expert in org development and digital facilitation in Canada. We met online. In early 2021, we saw many of our clients moving their physical office interaction to virtual spaces, right? That's what we were talking about, of how suddenly our LinkedIn was full of reactions to this move And it came with a lot of inefficiency and unhappiness. And we realized that bringing the like methodologies from agile design and facilitation practices is a really powerful lever to help teams redesign how they work. And so we've started to offer corporate training programs that are very experiential. We have to learn, we have to practice in order to start incorporating it in our teamwork. Anyway, the what I wanted to talk about with like time as material, which is such a fascinating lever, I think, for designers. And one of the pathways where we're thinking about it is like there's synchronous time, like you and I are talking now, and there's asynchronous time, which is, for example, whoever's listening to it, this discussion now, actually, they're interacting in an asynchronous way. We also mm-hmm. think there's parallel time, which is we're synchronous, but we're doing things separately. Mm-hmm. For example, maybe we are in a meeting together, but we are in breakouts. Like that's a parallel way to use time. Or we are in a meeting, mm-hmm. but everybody is silently reading the document instead of hearing it as a presentation. So you move at your own pace, right? Like that's a way to use time as a material in whatever is most important to be done in that moment. And of course, coming from a design perspective, like, are we trying to diverge? Are we trying to converge? What's the best way to interact that will allow for that to happen is something that we're very fascinated about, and that there are a lot of good practices in the world that can be made available to teams who are earlier in their journey. Yeah, so we've started offering these programs as Async, as the brand we've set up that's spelled A/SYNC, and publishing a lot of this kind of content on our LinkedIn page, publishing practice cards and other resources every Tuesday.
That's really cool.
I love
cool.
that. Yeah.
That's Thank very you. Cool. Please provide the link to Async as well. I will put it in the bio for everyone to that are interested to read up on what you are doing. You mentioned about three different modes: synchronous, asynchronous, parallel.
Mm-hmm.
In an innovation process, when you want to solve, understand complex problems and solve them, how do you use these modes to your advantage?
Well, first to be aware that these are at our disposal. And I think a lot of times, mm-hmm. actually, we're not. We think most things should be synchronous.
Mm-hmm.
But in innovation, it's so important for us to always to also have time alone. Mm-hmm. And maybe without speaking to anybody for a couple of days is what will help me internalize and think through my ideas. And I think the team needs to be aware that this is a valid way to be, to respect that and make that happen for each other. And I think this is a common mistake, especially as we've moved online, that asynchronous aspect is quite underdeveloped.
I can sympathize with that. Well, I can resonate with that 100%. I have been stuck in conversations, especially on, because most of our projects are remote. Used to mm-hmm. be certain workshops we would conduct personally, but most of the work is remote.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is an insecurity in some teams that if we don't meet face to face, if we are not trying to resolve it here, we can't.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be possible. And I always like to refer that to this quote when I want to make my point across is, I may not properly recite the quote, but what it says is like, the music is defined in the pause between the notes. That's a very good quote. I mean, I'm not a musician. I don't fully understand the quote, but I find a lot of advantage to give a pause to an activity, go do something completely radically different, or give it just a pause, you know, a weekend pause, and come back to it. And then I could look at, or I would look at the issue from a completely different standpoint, perspective. Is that the promise behind asynchronous work?
Well, first of all, I love this quote and that you brought it up so beautifully in the context of innovation and this metaphor that what we're trying to do is to create this beautiful music. Is it the promise of asynchronous work? I don't necessarily think that asynchronous is bringing the pause, but it's definitely by incorporating more asynchronous aspects and parallel aspects, we're able to play different notes with the people that we have, with the time that we have, and that the end result will be more beautiful and bringing the people alive as we play that music. One thing that I think we tend to forget, especially in kind of this go, 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 go environment, is to celebrate something. We have so few rituals, I think.
That's an important point.
Yeah, and it's important, and we know it's important, and yet we don't do it. We go on to the next project, or we're too tired to celebrate. And speaking of the insecurity that you brought up, I think it's these human connections, right? Like our own experience in the work of innovation, that are the act more as the antidote to this kind of insecurity, and feeling that it's a risk. Does your
the
team
importance
have...
of rituals is so beautiful. I don't want to lose this, the importance of rituals. Why is it so important for teams to have rituals?
Why is it important? I think humanity has rituals for a good reason. There are ways that are the scaffolding that provide the outlets and like these shared experiences, these moments that we need to keep that rhythm, to continue with the music metaphor. And the office had its own rituals, and I think that we need to redesign, like it's the opportunity to think of new rituals or choose the ones that we want to keep from a previous mode of working, and maybe redesign the way we do them instead of, you know, just trying to do the same thing. Like recreate the water cooler moment is something that we hear quite often, right? Like, what do we do now? There's no water cooler. And I think these are great discussions to have.
If you, for it's like, I would like to get to some examples of rituals. As it's such an important point. First of all, you cannot translate the rituals once you had in the physical spaces directly and try to use it for virtual spaces. That could not work, in my opinion. Well, maybe there is an example that would work, but I don't think this pure direct translation would work. Like based on your experiences, what are the rituals you have tried that did work in the virtual spaces that you could recommend to the audience?
I think there are rituals I like, and probably I'll stop doing them next year because we want to try something else. Like that's part of the experimental mindset, right? But at AQ, we started like these virtual coffees 2 years ago. I thought, we'll get bored of them. But actually, we're still doing them and still enjoying them. We tried virtual lunches. That didn't really take off, but the one-on-one conversations have been great. We place a lot of emphasis on the celebration aspect, and I consider it part of my job whenever a team completes a project to go and celebrate. Usually that means to go out for a meal, and fortunately in Tokyo, most of our team is able to get together. And the, yeah, funny thing is we tend to push it aside. We're like, oh no, we're working on the next project. Maybe we celebrate later. And it's like, no, go and, you know, have that meal together. I'm also looking forward in August to doing our first retreat in almost 3 years. So nice. To me, this is an example of a ritual that we have always had. But because now we're distributed, like fully distributed, the role of the retreat is evolving. And I think this is something a lot of companies are realizing. The importance of getting together and really tending to the quality of time that's spent together. We've always had, you know, whatever team building experiences and such. But really tuning in to what are the ways that we want to, like how we want to spend together. Is there an activity we want to do, or do we want to cook together? Our team likes to cook together. And I think the act of literally nourishing ourselves is so important to feeding, like it's literally feeding the team, right? And then cleaning up together. These are also important like rituals to do together. So having these bonding moments and to treat them as what keeps the, what really helps people feel seen, which is very difficult to do as a remote team, especially when a team is so busy and everybody is focused really on the productivity and getting stuff done and like trying to optimize. But actually that kind of speed in the longer run does not, we go nowhere fast.
Yeah, 100%. I can resonate and talk about this for a long time too. I feel like it as well. When we started Bonanza Design 2 years ago, so my understanding was that, we do one project and there will be some time, then we can start working on another project. That was true for a while, but now a reality become that as soon as we finish one project, there is another one waiting, right? And it's a challenge for me as a business owner to keep the client happy because client bring the cash flow and cash flow is important. But at the same time, if we don't give that gap in between, first of all, it would be too much on our team that are doing the nitty gritty because they don't have any. They go from full speed mode to another full speed mode with no time in between. And I feel like to your point that you said, like in the long term is looking at the long term. I think these pauses are really necessary because it allows for reflection, it allows for changing the gear, go on in a bit relaxed mode just for a while, for a week or so, and then do other things. My team, when they don't do project, I ask them, hey, you want to do TikTok? You want to do redesign? You want to look into some new apps, new innovative project? Do a weekly show and tell for us. So I think these are a thing that really help with the longevity, these activities are very important to grow a sustainable, to grow a team sustainably.
100% agree. And I'm so happy to hear you think of your business this way. And yeah, just wish that there were more businesses that put more importance of that, and not to do it because it's great for business, which is one thing, but because that's what feeds our design practice, like our individual design practice as well, regardless of which company you're working for. And also it's good for our families and communities as well, if we're not taking, you know, the stress and the violence of the workplace back to our homes and to our communities. This is something I've been thinking a lot about as we work in this field, like we choose to work in the field of design and innovation. And yeah, the world is literally on fire. I have my blinds down the whole of this week, right? And sometimes it feels the work that we do is quite remote, like it's so many steps removed from these immediate disasters. And working on how we work, to me, is the way that I'm currently like choosing to try to make a difference.
Yeah, I understand. I feel you on this. Is AQ, how do you see, so AQ has been around for a while now, and you are a small team. Do you see yourself as friends, colleagues? How do you describe the DNA of your team?
Yeah, thank you for asking. We're a studio practice. It's a company, we are friends, and we are practitioners that choose to work together. And it's no coincidence maybe that you ask this question, in that when we started not to go into the space, you know, the office space every day, which we really loved, right? Like it's our studio, it was this beautiful place. I mean, it still is this beautiful place, and we designed it so that we do our best work there. Our clients loved coming to our office. We had a lot of meetups and parties. And if you know Tokyo geography, it's on Roppongi Dori, halfway between Roppongi and Shibuya, but in this really unnamed back street, really old residential neighborhood. And once we started not to go there, and you know, it was kind of becoming dusty and unloved, it was very painful for me, because we're a design studio and it's critical for the physical manifestation of that studio to be alive, that it's a place of inspiration and creativity and a place that we want to go to. We decided to downscale our Tokyo office because we just weren't using it so much anymore. And I thought that we would find another use for that space. And it turns out, after kind of a series of conversations and workshops with the team, what really emerged was that people were looking for some kind of sanctuary. And I realized, I was sad to realize, like, oh, that's not our office. It's never going to be the office again. And so, yeah, we took that as an opportunity to really evolve the role of the studio space, like in our studio practice. And one thing that I'm super excited about right now is that we decided to open get another place, not in Tokyo, but in the mountains, to be that sanctuary. And so, you know, the Tokyo space, which is very central, like, it's a place for us to easily gather, or it's a nice place to put your laptop if you need. We also have a lot of equipment for user research, so like that's also there. And then the other place is really if you want to get away for a few days, or if your project team wants to get together and really do a deep dive, or you want to take your family up there, you know, on the weekend. That's what this space will be. And throughout working on this project, it really pushed our thinking about what a company is.
Mm.
It was funny because I had a lot of reaction from friends and collaborators are like, oh, you could take your clients there. And it's like, yes, but first we will go because we need to have that. And yeah, maybe in the future we will use it for client retreats and such. But it was really a revelation to be like, oh, this is something each of us wanted in our lives. And mm-hmm. our respective households didn't have the capacity either financially or, you know, being able yeah. to make it happen. It's a lot of work. And so it was like, oh, the company can do it and we can all enjoy. And so this whole process, we're now in the process of renovating, but it's like been this really amazing creative space for the team, you know, whether they're able to spend a lot of time on it or if they're super busy with assignments and can only drop in once in a while, it doesn't really matter. It's like holding the space for the team, each person on the team to be creative together, like to have new experiences together. And it's also giving everyone kind of a different relationship to Tokyo. I think that connection to place is very important and maybe another aspect that we will lose mm. once we live, you know, in Zoom like this. It kind of doesn't matter where we are. And that's amazing. And at the same time, like, I don't want to be totally neutral of where I am. And I think because mm-hmm. I live in Paris, this is especially important to me that I have, you know, I keep some kind of personal connection to Tokyo, which is where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the identity of the, you know, the company mm-hmm. as well. We cannot just be online, even though actually we could, but then mm-hmm. that, you know, that's not who we are. And so, yeah, this house project has opened up a lot of, it's been a vehicle for a lot of like interesting conversations and experiences. And I'm still kind of in awe that we can do something like this. And at the same time, like I'm looking for more of, you know, friends, people who have companies like you and are committed to the design practice, innovation practice, the creative practice to mm-hmm. search for different ways than what we think a mm-hmm. company should look like, how we think we should work. And to bring me back to my original point is to look at time and to look at space as material yeah. to design with.
That's just such a beautiful way of putting to describing the importance of these two. It's a very different and sort of like a philosophic, poetic way of defining spaces, especially the way that your last 10 minutes was so nice and listening to it, because resonated with me on so many different levels. And I can delve a bit deeper into that, but essentially as creatives, as innovation practitioners and designers, we are dealing, these are our objects, time and space. These are our materials mm-hmm. that we use. Of course, there's a lot going on in our neurons, and like we shoot neurons and we do something, we come up with ideas. But as especially in the world of remote world, that everything happens, time becomes a commodity. Mm-hmm. Space will be questioned, and then it begs for us to redefine the typical common ways of collaborating, ways mm-hmm. of being together. One thing that you mentioned that I really like, had my focus on, that is like the way you defined or you describe AQ was, we are a group of practitioners chose to work together. And that's so beautiful, because I think that's essentially what drives me to grow Bonanza Design. I think creating a space, again, a space in not in, in the physical form, but a space that could provide an opportunity for creatives to aim at achieving their financial freedom while not letting go of their creative freedom, right? And that's sort of like what drives me forward. And the way when you surface that, I realize that, oh yeah, that's where we are going to create a space to bring in practitioners, people that are passionate about what they are doing, and allowing them by collaborating together to have more freedom, to have more opportunities, to be able to have a house on top of the mountain outside of the Tokyo, which is so beautiful. And I think that's one of the advantages of having having a collective, having a corporation that could defend us or shield us as a group of people that would like to work together on a longer term basis.
You're giving me goosebumps. Yeah. And I see your podcast, like you created a space for us to have this conversation and connect over the value, like some of the values that we're discovering we hold in common. You know, we agreed to take the time, you came with the space. And I think, yeah, these things happened because you cared and I cared. And now we have this, this beautiful moment that hopefully listeners, you know, listening asynchronously. Yeah, and just this kind of thing.
Asynchronously.
And that it builds and builds.
Yeah, fantastic. Really happy that, you know, we went deep into the topic of space and remote world, especially because I have been thinking also about what you said is, you know, we have a space in Berlin, right? But, you know, when I'm thinking about my context is I come to the office from 8:30, 9 a.m., depending on the day, sometimes 7 a.m., and I'm out by, you know, again, 6 p.m., 7 p.m., 8 p.m., right? So my active hours happen in a basement, in a street in Berlin, right? Still part of Berlin, but if you ask me what's going on a day-to-day basis, I have no idea. But I find having a space, it's so crucial, right? Like a physical space, I see it as an extension of my mental space. And the word sanctuary that you use is so spot on. I think especially for creative designers, innovation practitioners, having a sanctuary is so, so crucial.
Yes. And it's probably not our bedroom. it's not the home office, no matter how nice it is. We need the affordances and be able to switch modes. You know, and so the kind of typical conversation tends to be, do we go to the office or not? And I think this is a very limiting way to think about space. It's what do we want these spaces to be in the way that we work? Like, what's the role that we want it to play? And I would love if more teams would think about space that way and then to recognize that there are more choices available. We have agency, and maybe it doesn't require you know, going up against the company policy. There are different ways to do it at the scale of our team, which in any case has the biggest impact on how we work, like the unit of the team.
Yeah, 100%. Looking at the time, we have recorded a solid 52 minutes of conversation. I think I'm really happy from where we are, and I would like to give it a pause and listen to this podcast again and see if there is further conversation we can have together. Thank you, Tamomi, for this conversation. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us. Sanctuary, importance of having time and space, especially in the remote life. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I really enjoyed our conversation. And yeah, no, this is wonderful.
Ciao.